Hello and welcome to this Microsoft TechNet session on Exchange 2007. My name is Robin McManus. Let's start the session by going into more detail on exactly what we will be covering. In this session, we'll talk about Exchange Server 2007, including how Exchange gives administrators more control. We'll cover a range of topics, starting with a quick review of the Exchange Server 2007 themes. We'll discuss server role-based deployment and the wizard-driven and command line installation routines. We'll go on to look at the Exchange Management Console and Shell, and we'll wrap up by discussing the changes to the storage architecture that benefit administrators, including Local Continuous Replication, LCR, and Clustered Continuous Replication, CCR. Our first demo will be a look at deploying a server. Then, we'll take a look at a couple of demonstrations on the Exchange Management Console. Then, we'll explore the Shell. We'll have three separate demos on the Shell. In the first, we'll move some mailbox and create a mail store. In the second, we'll run a script to create multiple mailboxes. In the third, we'll look at the powerful reporting facilities that exist within the shell. As with most TechNet sessions, some prior experience of Microsoft technologies or similar technologies is always helpful. The next slide provides a brief overview of what would be helpful, but not essential for this session. As we go through today's session, you will hear various Microsoft acronyms and terminology. While we will explain all new terms related to today's session, there are some general terms from the industry or from other versions of Microsoft products that we may not spend time on. To help you out, we have listed the areas that it may be helpful to be familiar with, either prior to this session or to reference afterwards. It will be helpful to have some IT administration experience with Microsoft Exchange Server 2003, Exchange 2000 Server, or Exchange Server 5.5. To cover the topics mentioned and keep the session flow going, we have divided the session up into the following agenda items. Today's session covers four main areas. In the first part of the session, we'll run through three things that will make deploying servers much easier: server role-based deployment, the command line installation routine, and the EX setup program. We'll finish up this part of the session with a demo of deploying a new server. We'll then discuss the new Exchange Management Console and contrast this with the earlier Exchange System Manager. You'll be impressed at how streamlined and easy to navigate the console has become. We'll run through a series of demonstrations using the console to perform a number of everyday administrative tasks before moving on to a discussion of the Exchange Management Shell. This command line management interface will quickly become your favorite administrative tool. As you learn to create powerful and flexible scripts to perform those repetitive tasks that all administrators have to spend time on, we have three demos on this performing a series of administrative tasks. Changes in the storage architecture are going to make your life as an administrator easier. We'll see how by exploring LCR and CCR, including how they made Exchange more reliable and more recoverable than ever before. Before we start, let's look at the Exchange Server themes. The goal with Exchange 2007 was to deliver on three themes. These themes were chosen back in 2003, and they have stayed quite constant during the course of the last 2.5 years since Exchange 2003 shipped. The first theme focuses on making sure that IT professionals get what they need. Many say that email is the most important application in their organizations, that without it they face big problems. They also say that current systems are too complex and expensive to maintain, and that many of the day-to-day tasks they perform will be better suited to script automation rather than tedious manual configuration. Exchange 2007 is all about giving you that control. Information workers say that they need access not just to email, but also to voicemail and faxes. They don't want to be tied to their desks. Either mobile devices are being widely adopted for good reason. People are mobile. Users want anywhere access to all sorts of messaging data. Finally, users say that setting up a meeting and choosing a room to hold it can be frustrating. Trying to tie everyone's schedule together can waste a lot of time. Exchange 2007 aims to make things easier for the information worker in regard to this. Finally, email needs to be secure. For most administrators, this is their top concern. Removing spam and viruses to provide a clean messaging stream needs to be a core design goal for many messaging systems these days. And it's one that Exchange 2007 provides. In addition, you want to be in control of the messaging environment to the extent that you can conform to legal and corporate-wide policies that require you to journal, archive and search through messages, and this needs to be easy. When Exchange 2007 was being designed, these three themes were kept to the fore, ensuring that Exchange would provide the messaging system administrators need. But it's worth noting that protection is covered in session ITProX 103. Let's return to the agenda. In the first part of this session, we're going to discuss server roles and role-based installation routines that Exchange Server 2007 provides. We'll cover a review on how you might implement roles within your organization before going to a demo of adding a server role to a new server. Let's start by looking at server roles. Server roles fall into one of two broad categories. One role is designed to be deployed in the perimeter network outside the corporate intranet with no access to Active Directory. The other role is designed to be installed inside the intranet with access to Active Directory. The server in the perimeter network, called an edge transport server, is isolated from Active Directory and functions as a message hygiene and routing engine. It's responsible for filtering messages as they arrive from untrusted networks, like the internet. Although it's not part of your Active Directory forest, to ensure that it can deliver messages to the correct recipient, it needs access to Active Directory information, which is provided by an instance of Active Directory Application Mode, ADAM, installed locally, and synchronized with an instance within your intranet. This role can't be combined with others, as that would compromise security to some extent. Connectors are used to route messages to and from the intranet. Message routing within the intranet or between trusted organizations is handled by the HUD transport server. This role can be combined with others when required. The client access server role enables non-MAPI clients like POP, IMAT, or Outlook Anywhere to connect to Exchange. It functions like front-end server does in 2003 without all the mailbox and routing elements to slow things down. The mailbox server is more like the traditional Exchange server that we saw in 2003. With the information store and associated public and private stores. However, it doesn't handle non-MAPI clients or message routing, as these are handled by other roles. By breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing, and access, the system works better, with the server able to focus on the given task. The Unified Messaging Server is new and lets you combine email with both voice, mail, and fax services. When you install a unified messaging server, you give your users a unified inbox. It links your PBX system with Exchange, handles phone calls, and provides answering services, as well as voicemail. In the next slide, we'll look at how you might combine these roles to support your organization. Now we'll put the whole thing together and step through the roles one at a time. Let's think about a message that arrives at your organization. The edge transport service is isolated in the perimeter network, routing messages to and from the internet. Messages are filtered using agents, like the connection filtering agent, which accepts or rejects SMTP connections from remote hosts based on IP addresses. Messages are also filtered based on sender, sender reputation, recipient address, and content. You can also combine third-party antivirus and anti-spam solutions on the edge transport server to provide a clean message stream into your organization. Smaller organizations may not implement edge servers, preferring instead to use hosted solutions, like Microsoft Exchange hosted services. Once the message is deemed safe, then Edge passes it along to the HUB transport server. Connectors are defined on both the edge transport and HUB transport servers to route messages from the perimeter network into your internet. Connectors are defined in pairs. For example, a send connector at the HUB has a corresponding receive connector at the edge. Communications between the edge and hub are secure and authenticated by default. On arrival at the hub transport server, transport rules are applied to further filter the message, consisting of conditions, actions, and exceptions. These rules enable you to create an ethical firewall that ensures inappropriate content does not enter or leave your organization. You can also use transport rules to maintain regulatory conformance. Legal regulations require that you store messages for search and retrieval on demand by the appropriate government agency. You may also have your own internal organization regulations that require disclaimers to be attached to all messages. The transport agents provided in Exchange, running on the Edge and Hub servers, allow you to easily conform to these regulations. You need to install at least one Hub server in each Active Directory site that contains mailbox servers. The HUB transport server now passes the message to the appropriate mailbox server. If the user is currently connected to the mailbox server from the MAPI client, such as Microsoft Outlook 2007, he or she is notified about the arrival of the new message. If the user is connected through an Exchange ActiveSync, Outlook Web Access, OWA, Outlook Anywhere, formerly known as RPC over HTTP, then the client access server is responsible for notifying the user. The message is retrieved by the remote client. The client access server can also ensure that remote users connect to a suitable client access server, one that is the same site as the mailbox server. This can take the form of either a redirection, that is telling the client which server to use, or proxying. You will need one client access server in each Active Directory site that contains a mailbox server. Finally, the new Unified Messaging Server can link your PBX with your email. If a user is available, calls will be routed to telephones and faxes to fax machines. If the user is unavailable, an email message with the attached voice message will be placed in his or her mailbox. Outlook, OWA and EAS clients provide in-messaging controls to hear and respond to these voice messages. We won't be covering unified messaging in this section. Having discussed server roles, let's do the installation options. The main goal of introducing role-based installation was to enable administrators to perform installations easier. As we just saw, by breaking a single server into distinct functional units, storage, routing and access, the system works better, with the server able to focus on a given task. It also runs better because all unnecessary components are not installed. Administrators have tried to work around the monolithic installation approach of earlier Exchange versions by tuning the server once it's been deployed. But this has proved time-consuming and not as ideal as it could be. The Exchange product group wanted to achieve a way in which the Exchange front-end server could be installed simply, requiring little in the way of adjusting things once it was installed. Just run setup, choose the client access option, and the rest is done for you. One obvious benefit is that the mantra, only install the service you need, can now be put into practice. If your computer is a front-end server for OWA users, you need to install only the client access server role. By not installing the other unnecessary roles, the server's security is enhanced. In addition, you can truly optimize the servers to do the task or role. Mailbox servers have different jobs to do compared to client access servers or transport servers. In Exchange 2003, it was difficult to optimize a server that was hosting several redundant roles. With Exchange 2007, it just became a whole lot easier. Load balancing can easily be provided by installing multiple servers for a given role, and the mailbox role also supports clustering, which we'll look at later in this session. Typically, you will need multiple client access servers to support remote clients and clustered mailbox servers to provide high availability of the store's processes. Applying server patches and updates can be a disruptive process for your users. If a minor security exchange is needed for the client access role in Exchange 2003, you'll have needed to apply the patch to all Exchange servers, regardless of their function in the organization, possibly requiring a server restart. Now you can apply specific role-based patches and updates, which will minimize the impact on your messaging system. The final benefit of using server roles is that, from an administrative perspective, it's more intuitive. You'll understand what it is the server does. It stores, it routes, it provides client access, and you can manage that role better. You realize how to optimize, how to plan for high availability of a given role, and the impact of unavailability. Using server roles brings enormous administrative benefits to you. Let's take a look at the actual deployment options available once you've decided on what role you want to install. Before you start any server installation, you'll need to be sure that the server computer meets the minimum hardware requirements, and that the operating system and other software requirements are met, that Active Directory and existing Exchange organization requirements are met, and that you have logged onto the server with sufficient privileges to perform the required task. We won't cover these requirements here, as that's outside the scope of this session. Assuming that all prerequisites have been met, you insert the product CD and the deployment wizard starts, presenting a menu of server roles. Simply click the role that you want to install. Keep in mind that the Edge Transport server role can't be combined with any other role, so as soon as you click any other role, that role becomes available. The Bridgehead server role is now the Hub Transport server, and the Gateway server is now the Edge Transport server. Having made your selection, proceed by clicking Next. Built into the deployment wizard is the integrated best practice analyzer. This will perform prerequisite checks prior to attempting to install the selected roles. These checks include organization-specific checks, such as whether Active Directory is in native mode. It also performs role-specific checks, like whether the required software is installed. For example, the client access server needs certain IIS components to function. Assuming all is well, you can proceed with the installation. Otherwise, you're presented with a report as to why the installation can't proceed, allowing you to take corrective actions. For example, you may be notified that IIS components have not been installed, and although the organizational checks were okay, the role-specific ones have failed. It's handy to be able to perform installations from the command line too. Exchange 2003 never really gave a convenient option to perform unattended installations. This has changed with Exchange 2007. Instead of running the wizard, you can open a command prompt and run setup from there. You can now create a simple one-line script or batch file that contains the command to deploy the server that you need. Perhaps the major benefits of performing command line setups, aside from the benefits of unattended setups, is that you can separate the forest preparation from the server deployment. When you run setup using the deployment wizard, if the organization hasn't been prepared yet, it will be done automatically during the server deployment. While that may suit you, especially if you're a single servant organization, it may not if you have many servers. Forest preparation involves modifying the schema of Active Directory. Only members of the schema admins or enterprise admins group can perform this task. In large organizations, the task of forest preparation is usually performed by a different administrative team than the one that deploys servers. Server deployment requires reduced permissions, domain administrators, and appropriate exchange permissions. Various command line options can be used to customize the setup. We'll review those in a moment, but one switch is to prepare the AD switch. Exchange 2000 provides a similar mechanism, as you could run setup with the forest prep switch. However, this was followed by the domain prep switch, and then the deployment of a management tool was performed. And then you had to create the admin groups and so on. In all, it was a confusing setup routine for many customers. Let's take a look at the command line script. When you run setup from the command line, you can specify the mode of operation with /m. Choose between install, the default, uninstall, recover server, and upgrade. You can define the roles to install using the /r switch. Separate multiple roles with commas. Select H for hub transport, C for client access, E for edge transport, M for mailbox, or U for unified messaging. You can also install only the management tools by using the option T for your server role. If you want to specify a target installation folder, use /t. Use /prepare-ad to prepare the forest, and /prepare-schema to prepare the Active Directory schema. Note that the difference is that prepare-schema only modifies the schema in preparation for the installation. It does not create the necessary security groups in the forest route required to deploy Exchange Server. If you run prepare-ad without having previously prepared the schema, the installation routine will prepare the schema at the same time as it prepares the Active Directory. The option to separate schema updates from Active Directory forest preparation tasks might be useful for larger organizations that have specific teams responsible for schema changes. In both cases, you must be in the same site and the same domain at Schema Operations Masters to run setup with these switches. If you want or need to specify which domain controller will be read from or written to during installations, use the /dc switch. It's worth noting that when you perform the forest prep, all the changes are made at the Schema Operations Master, so it's a good idea to perform the forest prep at the same site as that server, although you don't need to specify the server by using the /dc. A typical setup command may be setup /r:u:m:h. That would deploy three roles, hub transport, mailbox, and unified messaging to a server. The ex setup command is used to add or remove roles from servers that have already been deployed. It's also used to deploy clustered mailbox servers. As with setup, the /m switch is used to define the mode of operation, and install is again the default. The roles are defined with the /r, and the same role names are used as with the setup. Multiple roles can be again separated with commas. /dc can be used to specify a domain controller that should be referenced for the installation. Additional switches include /s to specify a source folder for the installation files, the number of switches that install clustering. It's outside the scope of this section to discuss the detailed requirements for establishing CCR, so we won't go into detail on the command switches now. It's great to be able to drop to the command prompt, run a small single-line command, and deploy or remove server roles. The same prerequisite checks are performed as with any other deployment, and then the server is configured. Let's take a look at our first demo. In this first demonstration, we'll see how to add a new server role, in this case the mailbox role, to a new server, EXBE01. In this demonstration, you'll see how to add a server role using the command line setup program. Now let's add the required IIS components. Open the control panel, select Add or Remove Programs, and then click Add Remove Windows Components. Highlight Application Server and click Details and select the ASP.NET component, which automatically selects the required IIS components and the COM Plus components required by the mailbox role. Files will copy, and then we can start the Exchange installation. This machine already has the Microsoft.NET Framework version 2.0, the new management console installed, so it meets all the prerequisites. Okay, let's start installing the mailbox role. Open a command prompt, not the PowerShell, just a regular command prompt. Switch to the CD-ROM drive root directory and run setup with the /r:m switch to install the mailbox role. This process can take quite a while, so it's best to return to the presentation. Now we'll briefly review client deployment. The number one help desk cost for many customers today is dealing with people who are installing Outlook without knowing what the name of their mail server is. So Exchange implements this simple thing that has a dramatic impact, auto-discover. If the user is on the corporate intranet connected to Active Directory when they start Outlook, auto-discover will automatically get the settings required to configure Outlook successfully from Active Directory. Alternatively, if they're outside the corporate intranet, but they know the email address, the client device knows how to compute the URL, which is offered from the Exchange Client Access Server, and will download all the settings the client needs to connect to the Exchange server. This XML file has absolutely everything the system needs, from security settings, RPC over HTTP settings, the mailbox server, and works on mobile devices too. So the only thing anyone will ever type in a mobile device is their email address, once. And then the entire mobile experience will be set up. It's a scalable, easy provisioning experience with large cost savings for Exchange administrators. Let's return to the agenda. Exchange System Manager has been around since Exchange 4, which is over 10 years. Exchange 2007 brings a new, streamlined management interface in the form of Exchange Management Console. In this section, we're going to look at the console and see how easy and intuitive it is. We have two demos lined up, and we'll see how you can easily perform day-to-day tasks with the wizard-driven interface of the Exchange Management Console. When the Exchange product group set about designing the new Management Console interface, they wanted to provide consistency across the management toolset. This includes the Management Console, the Management Shell, and we'll discuss shortly, and the EX Setup command. Whenever you make administrative changes in Exchange, the Exchange Store, the Registry, and the Active Directory are configured. At the heart of everything is the management engine, which is driven by Windows PowerShell commands, or CMD lets. Command line programs, like the Exchange Management Shell and EX Setup, tap directly into this engine. Whereas, when you use the Exchange Management Console, your actions are processed by WinForms and Monad Data Provider before being passed to the Monad engine. The important thing to remember here is that however you choose to administer this system from the command line using the shell or from a wizard in the console, you are actually executing the same PowerShell commands. This consistency makes the system powerful and extensible. Before we take a look at the new console and shell, let's review the old system manager. Anyone who has ever managed an Exchange server will likely have seen the Exchange System Manager, ESM. As Exchange has evolved, ESM has gotten more complicated, and the hierarchy has gotten deeper and deeper, making it harder to locate the things you need. Nor is it all that intuitive. The product group felt it was time for a change, and while reworking the under-hood stuff, they took the opportunity to work the interface too. The first thing you'll notice is the clean interface. The console tree contains a navigation hierarchy. Things are grouped logically in four work centers. Recipient configuration, which contains all the recipient objects, like mailbox, contacts, and distribution groups. The server configuration center, which groups servers by role, bridgehead, client access, mailbox, and unified messaging. The organization configuration work center, from which you can administer organizational settings, like transport rules, mailbox folders, and UM dial plans and IP gateways. And finally, the toolbox, which builds shortcuts to useful tools, like the best practice analyzer or the queue viewer. As you select items in the console tree, the results pane updates. For example, if the mailbox role is selected in the Server Configuration Work Center, the results pane lists all the servers that host that role. The work pane reflects the item in the results pane. In this case, child objects of the mailbox server role are shown. The action pane allows you to perform an administrative action on the object selected in either the results or work panes. You can also access the same actions from the context menu of many items. When you choose an action, a wizard will run that guides you through the management process you've selected. The console allows the administrators to perform tasks using an intuitive wizard interface. Although the details on each wizard will vary, they are consistent in many respects. They all include a navigation bar on the left to enable you to determine where you are in the management process, and a summary screen right before you perform the selected action. It allows you to be sure you're ready to proceed. It's a bit like a what-if parameter in the shell, which we'll cover shortly. On the summary page, the wizard interface will also provide PowerShell one-liners. Remember that you said that the console was based on the shell. Well, you can take advantage of that. The summary screen exposes the PowerShell commands that are being used by the wizard. If you like, you can cut and paste syntax into the shell or the MSH file for refuse later. Let's take a look at the console in action. In this first demonstration, we'll see where everything is in the console and run through the process of creating a new mailbox store with the console. Because of a complex navigation tree, over-dependence on content menus, and the lack of integrated recipient management, the Exchange System Manager in Exchange 2003 and earlier versions is not as efficient as it could be. In this demo, you will see some sort of the usability enhancements that have been made to the new Exchange Management Console in Exchange 2007. That makes it more productive for administrators. The Exchange Management Console is comprised of four main areas: the console tree, the results pane, the work pane, and the action pane. The console tree has been simplified from 8 levels deep to 3 levels deep, with items logically grouped. Under servers, the modular architecture allows specific servers to be installed and managed on a server, which in turn allows the administrator to create specialized servers, such as client access-only servers. A toolbox has been added where helpful diagnostic and reporting tools, such as the Exchange Best Practice Analyzer, can easily be located and started. You'll notice that as you navigate within the console tree, the result pane is updated to reflect your position in the hierarchy. As you select an item from the result pane, the work pane and action pane update to reflect this. Let's perform an administrative task right now. We'll create a new mailbox store. First, we locate the server. Next, we choose Manage Mailbox Role and then select the storage group from the work pane that we want to add the store to. Then, we click the exposed link to the action pane and create the store. You can use the name Mailbox Database 2. A couple more clicks and it's created. In this demonstration, we'll use a wizard to create and move mailboxes. We can use a filtering capability in the Exchange Management Console to display only the data that is relevant for the administrator. For example, we can only show the servers that we are interested in managing. Under Recipient Management, we can use a filter to show only the users that we want to administer. Let's filter for any mailbox with a display name that contains H. We will now move the two users, Holly and Peter, to the new database we've created. You can move more than one user at a time. In the wizard, you can define error handling for corrupt messages and schedule the move for later. The process bar shows the state of each mailbox as it's being moved. Now you can see that the users have been moved to the new database. Most of the administrative tasks are available in Exchange Management Console and wizard-driven. This makes things easier for you, but remember that even though some tasks can be performed against multiple objects, like we just saw with the Move Mailbox wizard, not all can. This is where the Exchange Management Shell is helpful. It's great for bulk, administrative, and repetitive tasks, as we'll see shortly. That concludes the section on Exchange Management Tools. So let's return to the agenda. In this section, we're going to look at the new interface on the Exchange Management Shell. Although it's a command line tool, the shell can accomplish all the tasks that the console can, but it's quicker, easier, and with less intervention from you. A GUI-based administration tool like the Exchange Management Console is great for ad hoc administrative tasks, but it's not really ideally suited to repetitive tasks. This situation is where the Exchange Management Shell is helpful. Based on the Microsoft Windows Server PowerShell technology, it builds on the operations that are available in the Exchange Management Console. Unix administrators will be familiar with the term shell. A shell provides a powerful, flexible, and scriptable command line experience that allows you to perform any administrative task that you can perform using the console. The difference between using the shell and the console is that the shell is ideally suited to repetitive tasks. PowerShell is not a text-based shell. Instead, it uses an object model based on the Microsoft .NET platform. It has a substantial number of built-in commands that provide you with a powerful toolset for script-based administration. The shell is ideally suited to performing repetitive bulk operations. If you have to create mailboxes for 1,000 user accounts, the Exchange Management Console process would be slow and tedious. But you can achieve the same objective with a few simple commands using the shell. And if you save these commands in a file, you can reuse your scripts later. Let's take a look at how commands are structured before seeing a demonstration with the shell. Let's now look closely at a shell command and its syntax. The get mailbox command is one that you're going to use a lot. In fact, before we go further, a useful command to know is get ex command, because it will return a list of all the Exchange-specific shell commands. Like all commands, get mailbox is constructed from a verb, a noun, and some parameters. A verb and noun are separated by a hyphen and no spaces. Also, a hyphen precedes the parameter name. The argument can take a number of forms depending upon what you're configuring. In this case, the server name is placed in quotes. Nouns are always singular, even if there are multiple objects. For example, it's get mailbox, not mailboxes, get exchange server, not servers, and so on. When we execute the command, the results are returned as a list of properties and their associated values. This table could be formatted, and selected properties and values can be requested from the shell. We have asked for all mailboxes that are hosted on server SMBEX01. Let's take a few sample commands so that we can get an idea of how all this works. Let's start with our basic get mailbox again. This time we've used the pipelining facility within the shell. A short vertical bar is used to join separate commands to form a more complex command. And the result of the first command is passed to the subsequent command. So we ask the shell to get all mailboxes, then to pass the results to the where object command, which produces a subset of the mailboxes that meet the criteria defined in curly brackets. In this case, a name like anything that begins with an A. What actually happens is that the where object command goes through each of the return mailboxes and compares the name property value of this name box. When you use where object, you enclose in curly brackets the comparison that you want to make. You can define which object you're comparing to the criteria by using $_.name. This means the name of the current object in the filter. We can build on the last command too. Suppose we wanted to move mailbox that are on a specific server. Start with the basic get mailbox, link that to the where object, this time looking for a server name property value that matches SMBEX01, and pass that to the move mailbox command with the required parameter of the target database. Because it's a powerful command, we've placed the what if parameter at the end of this. This allows you to see the effect of what you ask without doing it. You can rerun the command without the what if parameter when you want to move the mailboxes. Suppose we wanted to create mailboxes for other accounts. We can create a command that looks for users in the sales OU and creates a mailbox for them on the sales server. Even with these short, simple commands, you can get an idea of how powerful the shell can be. Let's quickly compare some Visual Basic scripts to PowerShell commands. Without going into too much detail, the PowerShell can accomplish a set of tasks in very little code. Whilst the same task performed using B would take many lines of code, to extract mailbox statistics for a given server takes around 14 lines of VB code, and it can be done quicker with one command in PowerShell. Virtually anything you can do with VB can be done quicker, easier, and with less codes with Shell. I think we can see the Exchange Management Shell really is a very powerful, simple, and intuitive interface for administrators. We'll come to this in our demos in a little while. First, let's take a quick look at scripts. If you find yourself regularly running the same commands, perhaps to create a user account, add a mailbox for the user, add him and her to groups, and so on, you could instead join the commands together and save them in a script file. Your script can even call managed code from other sources, such as Visual Basic. So if you have a number of existing scripts in Visual Basics that you want to continue using for the time being, there's no problem. You can call them from within your shell scripts. As with many other scripting platforms, many samples are available out there in the community, including at the Script Center. You can rework some of these samples to suit your needs. When you think about day-to-day administrative tasks, many of them support the idea of scripting. When you add a new server, you can have a script to create storage groups, to create the stores, use the CSV file to create users in Active Directory, enable the user's mailbox, and then produce a CSV report of the whole provisioning process, and you could reuse the script again and again. Providing a secure scripting environment is of vital importance. In Exchange, there are three levels of security for running scripts. The most secure is only allowing scripts that they locally created to be run. The lowest level security allows the administrators to run scripts they have downloaded from an untrusted source, such as the internet. By default, the security level is set to the most secure setting. Another key security point is the .msh files. An other fileless extension cannot be associated with the Exchange Management Shell. This, in effect, eliminates the possibility of administrators double-clicking a file, doing harm to the Exchange environment through the shell. Let's take a look at the sample script. We'll run through a provisioning script in the demo, so we won't go into each element of the code here. The point is to show how the different commands we looked at build into a powerful provisioning script. Let's take a look at the demonstration of the shell. In the first demo, we're going to perform the same tasks we did using the console, but this time using the shell. First we'll move mailboxes, and then we'll create a mail store. The usability enhancements in the Exchange Management Console for Exchange 2007 are great. But what is more exciting is that this entire graphical user interface has been built on top of a rich command line shell. All the actions performed in the Exchange Management Console can be executed in the command line scriptable interface based on the Windows PowerShell. We call this the Exchange Management Shell. This shell experience provides administrators with greater control of their environment through automation and with powerful single line commands that increase efficiency and productivity. To demonstrate the power of this shell, let's move multiple mailboxes using the command line. But instead of picking mailboxes by name, like we did in the Exchange Management Console, we'll move all the mailboxes from one database to another one. First, let's see what mailboxes we have by using the getMailbox command. In this case, we'll check which mailboxes are present on the database mailbox store. In this example, there are about a dozen mailboxes left on mailbox database. Let's say we wanted to remove the primary mail database. First, we'd need to move all the mailboxes from that store to another store. This is certainly possible with the Exchange Management Console, but it's a time-consuming task. Using the shell, we can perform a bulk move that migrates all mailboxes from this database to a newly created mailbox database 2 database. Since we are a bit new to the shell experience, we'll use the validate-only parameter to see what will happen first. If the results look good, we can execute the move. It will take a few moments, even for this relatively small number of mailboxes. In this demonstration, we will create a new mail store using the Exchange Management Shell, and then we'll verify the creation using the Exchange Management Console. The simple set of commands that we will be using could be strung together with prompts to create a powerful provisioning script. In the Exchange Management Shell, we are able to type simple verb noun commands. This command will create a new mail store in our first storage group. If you look in Exchange Management Console, you can see that the new store exists, but it isn't mounted. We could mount it here, but let's go back to the shell to do it. First, though, we'll change the mailbox retention value from 30 to 20 days. Now, let's mount the database. If we switch back to the console, we can see the changes we made. If we change a property such as deletion settings, we'll also be able to see this reflected in the Exchange Management shell. As this demonstration of the parity between the shell experience and using Exchange Management Console shows, simple one-line commands can change any configuration within Exchange and related Active Directory properties. In this demo, we'll look at that provisioning script and then rerun it. The Exchange Management shell, based on the Windows PowerShell, is perfect for automation and bulk changes in the Exchange environment. In this demonstration, we will create users with a simple script that has been written using a string of tasks to provision a server. You can create scripts that string a number of tasks together for some powerful provisioning. This sample script has been created to provision a complete server. First, it creates storage groups, then it creates mailbox databases. Then it uses a .csv file with a list of users and creates them in Active Directory, as well as mailbox enabling them. If you look at the .csv file it uses, you notice that a password column is blank. The password is generated by a function for the provisioning script that we looked at. As you can appreciate how rapidly this can be done with a few lines of script compared to writing this in Visual Basic and using a number of APIs. Given the basic fundamental design of the Exchange Management shell, all objects in the Exchange that can be managed by the shell can also be reported on through the shell. This means that through GET commands or through a series of GET commands, administrators can generate reports on their Exchange environment. Then they could export to CSV files, HTML, or even charts. If an administrator exports objects to a CSV file, he or she could also change those results in Excel, for example, and then re-import those values back into Exchange. There are some built-in tasks, such as test service health or test system health, that, as the name implies, tests the relative healthiness of the environment. There are also test harness for objects such as transport rules that can be used to test the interaction of the rules with other defined rules and to ensure that you are getting the desired results prior to enabling them. Let's take a look at some of this now in our last demo in the shell. In this last shell demonstration, we'll see how you can easily report on objects in Exchange using the shell. The shell contains a number of reporting tools, and since we made a number of significant changes, what with adding stores, users and mailboxes, Now might be a good time to check them out. We can see that all the servers currently required to run Exchange have been started. Using a batch file, we'll stop the Microsoft Exchange Mailbox Assistance service. When we run the script again, we can see that the service is no longer running. We start the service again, and then using the test minus service health command to verify that it's running. Besides viewing data in the command line, reports can be made in various other formats, such as charts, CSV, or even XML. The example shows mailbox data being sent to a CSV file, which can be used in reports in the Badger topology. It's important to note that data being piped is not text, but rather an object whose contents and structure persists, and that the next command can manipulate and pass on. In this example, the results of the getMailbox command are being grouped and counted, and the result is being exported to a CSV file. Now we'll move on to discuss storage and recovery. But first, let's take a quick look at the agenda again. A number of changes have been made to storage architecture. Let's focus on recovery and reliability now. We'll look at LCR and CCR and the benefits they bring to administrators. Exchange Server 2007 now supports log shipping as a way of providing an up-to-the-moment backup of storage group to guard against storage group and database failures. As many of you will be aware, transaction log files are used in Exchange Server to hold changes that are about to be made to the database in a given storage group. These logs contain a record of all changes made to the database since the last normal backup. If you take a copy of a storage group, all that's needed to synchronize the database it contains with the live system is to replay the log files against the copy. That is the basis of both LCR and CCR. As you're also probably aware, performing a restore operation is a time-consuming process, and if we can reduce the situation where we need to perform them, that's got to be a good thing. The Exchange product group looked at the information about when and why restores were being done, and they discovered that the most common reason for performing a restore was a disk failure. All bearings in a disk drive wear out every couple of years, and people have to look to backup to recover. Log shipping is a great way to get around that because it's a continuous replication. Each log file is played back against a duplicate storage group's database. So you always have a live copy of the database available in case a disk drive fails. In some ways, LCR is like a locally stored mirror of the database. However, there are situations where other failures can cause a database to become unavailable. If your server power supply goes out, having a local copy of the database won't help. CCR was designed for two computers to support complete server failure and, therefore, address this problem. You create a copy of the database on another computer, and log shipping keeps them synchronized. It's been designed so that those servers can also be in two different physical sites, geographically separate if you want, to have an insurance against a site failure, and all this is built into Exchange 2007. A side benefit of having multiple copies of a database at all times is that when you want to perform a backup operations, you can do this on a standby database, which will reduce the performance impact on your users. And although LCR and CCR reduce the likelihood of having to resort to restore operation after a disk failure, they also reduce the number of backups that you need to perform. Of course, having a second copy of a database doesn't protect you from accidentally deleting something since the last deletion will be duplicated on the replica. The other major reason for performing a restore is where users have deleted information. The dumpster interval was 3 days in Exchange 2003. That's been increased to 14 days in Exchange 2007. This should allow users to recover their information without you needing to restore the whole database and then merge mailboxes. Next, we'll review each of these technologies. By reducing the number of backup operations, the cost of performing backups and maintaining archives is reduced. Administrators are always looking for ways to reduce costs, and LCR can provide a reduction in the total cost of ownership of Exchange. Although you cannot guard against all forms of data loss with LCR, you can protect against the most common, loss of a storage group through loss of underlying disk, and you won't even need to perform a restore. Backups do not provide fault tolerance. They provide a means to recover lost data. A system that can continue to operate after a failure of a component is said to be fault tolerant. With LCR, your server will continue to operate even if a disk fails. Provided you have everything in place, log files and correct disk configurations have always given you the ability to recover to the point of failure. And now, with log shipping, you can achieve a higher levels of resilience. Simply stated, you need to perform far fewer backups. Previously, when a disk failed, you would need to replace it, perform a restore at the storage group, and then replay the logs since the last backup. Now you don't even have to do anything. At least not immediately. The system is still running. Let's summarize the benefits of CCR and see how it takes reliability and recovery to the next level. Because Exchange Server 2007 only supports active, passive cluster configurations, there is no single point of failure. This makes the cluster more fault tolerant. The more reliable your messaging system, the easier things will be for you. You don't have to install the cluster on a shared storage devices. Because of this, CCR supports a wider range of storage. And you don't have to install on shared storage, which means the requirements for the server hardware are less stringent. Nor do you have to select hardware from the cluster category in the Windows Service Catalog. As long as the servers in the cluster are comparable, that's all you need to worry about. With Exchange Server 2007, you can create a cluster that spans multiple data centers without the need for third-party software. Everything you need is built into Exchange. The Exchange product group has unified the cluster installation process with the standard mailbox server role installation, so no specialized knowledge is required to install CCR. It's quick and easy to set up. And all cluster-specific related management tasks are hidden underneath the associated generic Exchange Server management task. For example, when you perform storage group reconfiguration, Exchange Server performs the related CCR management tasks for you. Because CCR creates a second copy of databases on a passive node, the passive node can be used to offload the effect of doing regular backups. For example, by doing backups on the passive node, the backup window can be extended and the I/O load is no longer on the active node. Now let's look at the benefits of the Exchange 2007 provides to administrators through storage improvements. Let's take a look at the long-term archival. In Exchange 2003, you need to take daily backups and, when required, restore it to an identically rebuilt server. Exchange Server 2007 allows you to perform restores of storage groups to any server, regardless of detailed configuration. In addition, you no longer need to perform daily normal backups, but you can rely on a combination of weekly normal and incremental backups. In Exchange 2003, users had only 3 days in which to recover the deleted items. Now they have 14 days. And if you're beyond the 14-day window, you can still restore to any server. The last 2 points make the most significant impact. When a disk failed in Exchange 2003, you need to restore to an identically rebuilt server. In Exchange 2007, you don't need to do anything. Continuous replication means the server is still running. And if you faced a site-wide disaster on Exchange 2003, again, it's restored to identically rebuilt server. With CCR in Exchange 2007, you don't need to do anything, as CCR runs across multiple sites without the need for any third-party software or components. In this session, we talked about Exchange Server 2007 and discussed how Exchange gives administrators more control. We discussed server role-based deployment. We looked at both the Exchange Management Console and Shell, and then finished up by exploring LCR and CCR. We covered a range of demonstrations that showed the intuitive new interface of Exchange Management Console, as well as the power and flexibility of the Exchange Management Shell. Exchange Server 2007 offers exciting and powerful new administrative features that will undoubtedly save you time and effort when performing your day-to-day tasks. For the most comprehensive technical information on Microsoft products, visit the main TechNet website at www.microsoft.com/TechNet. You can also visit www.microsoft.com/TechNet/ITProExe102 for more information on books, courses, certifications, and other community resources that relates directly to this particular session. There are a number of other resources that are available for Microsoft. Microsoft also has instructor-led courses if you prefer the classroom-style environment. Microsoft Learning develops courseware called Microsoft Official Curriculum, MOC, which includes e-learning, Microsoft Press Books, workshops, clinic, and Microsoft Skills Assessment, MOC, is offered in an instructor-led environment and offers comprehensive training courses for IT professionals in supporting and implementing solutions using the Microsoft products and technologies. The course that best supports this session is Getting Started with Microsoft Exchange Server 2007 Clinic, which is available now. For more information, please visit www.microsoft.com/learning. There's also an assessment program available that can help you test your knowledge. Microsoft Skills Assessment is a free online learning tool. It is an easy way for IT professionals to check their skills. You can quickly check your skills in implementing or managing Microsoft products or business solutions. Just take a short 30-question assessment and see how well you know your stuff. The skills assessment includes a personalized learning plan, which includes links to Microsoft official curriculum, specific TechNet articles, Microsoft Pressbooks, and other Microsoft learning content. There's also a way to measure how well you did compared with others who took the same assessment. Microsoft Skills Assessment is an expanding learning platform. Available now are assessments for Windows Server 2003, including Security and Patch Management, Exchange Server 2003, Windows Storage Server, Office 2003, and all VisualStudio.net. If you want to take your skills assessment to the next level, a number of certification programs are available. In a highly competitive IT job market, how can you differentiate yourself from the next candidate? The Microsoft Certification Program provides that edge. Earning a specific accreditation provides objective validation of the availability to successfully perform critical IT functions. Embraced by industry professionals worldwide, Microsoft Certification remains one of the most effective ways to reach long-term career goals. It is a surefire way for companies to develop and retain valuable IT staff. There are a number of accreditations available, starting with the basic Microsoft Certified Professional, MCP. You can choose to go on to become a fully certified systems administrator, MCSA, or a system engineer, MCSE, or a desktop specialist, MCDST. Away from the infrastructure side, the MCDBA certifications covers SQL Server products. For more information about the certification program, visit www.microsoft.com/learning/MCP. This session was brought to you by TechNet. TechNet has gone through some changes recently, which I'm sure you'll find interesting to hear about. To help explain this in more detail, I'd like to introduce Carolyn McGrath, IT Professional Marketing Manager, to cover these changes in more detail.
For IT professionals, all the resources in the TechNet program will give you the support you need to be successful with our technology. Whether you are deploying new software, managing a server environment, or troubleshooting, TechNet has a resource for you. Use the web for immediate access to documentation, knowledge base, scripts, downloads, and more. Webcasts and events will give you deep insight into specific technology topics. Keep up to date with technology news using the TechNet Flash. This is a twice-monthly newsletter that you can customize to give you information about the specific technology that interests you. With more time to read, the TechNet magazine is an excellent resource offering in-depth articles written by industry-leading technologists. If you want to ensure that you have all of the essential resources at your fingertips, the TechNet subscription is for you. It includes full version software and betas so that you can evaluate our technology at your own pace. No time bombs, so your product analysis won't time out. It includes two complimentary telephone support incidents. Talk to Microsoft technical professionals to help you with whatever challenges you may encounter with the software. That is $500 worth of value. The TechNet subscription is a great value to all IT professionals. Finally, we have TechNet VLabs. Use this to get your hands on the technology in a hosted environment. You can explore how it works, run different scenarios, and have a full product experience without having to dedicate your time to deploy and manage the hardware to do so yourself. Overall, the TechNet program has all of the resources you need to get the most out of Microsoft technology. TechNet Plus subscription, what is it? Get hands-on experience with the technology through software and betas, including Office, Windows, and servers. Support when you need it, including two free telephone support incidents. Easy access to information via updates, utilities, white papers, knowledge base, and more. Work on your skills at your own pace, e-learning courses and training. The TechNet Plus subscription, that's what it is. Need support? Answers are standing by. You have a choice of three support offerings from Microsoft. Firstly, we have online and self-help. Choose from the TechNet website, the Security Center Online, Knowledge Base, Product Support Centers, the TechNet Script Center, news groups, user groups, and the TechNet Plus subscription. Secondly, we have assisted incidents. Assisted incidents include email support, phone support contracts, advisory services. Finally, contract-based support. Contract-based support is offered to organizations and consists of premier support or essential support. Thank you for listening to this TechNet session.